The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the century of lies.
Let's hear it for Doug McVeigh.
Steve, thank you. Thank you.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Well, this week, from mercenaries to marijuana, the amazing journey of Zachary Venegas. Plus, we're going to take a look at human rights in the drug war. But first, coming up May 10th through 12th, it's the 12th National Conference on Cannabis Therapeutics, being sponsored by Patients Out of Time. Full disclosure, I work with Patients Out of Time doing social media and website work, among other things. With me is the Chief Operating Officer for Patients Out of Time, Laramie Silber. Laramie, tell me about this year's conference.
It's going to be a fantastic lineup of faculty. We've really got a great group of people, not only for the main conference on Friday and Saturday, but also for our pre-conference policy workshop on Thursday. Going to be looking at how to protect patients in the era of legalization and look at a model bill for New Jersey that we're putting together.
Now, the theme for this year's conference is Cannabis Relieves Pain, Treats Addiction. Who are some of the people you're going to have talking about this?
Well, with that theme, you know we're going to be talking about the opioid crisis, and Dustin Sulak does some amazing work with patients on that, so we're going to be hearing from him. We're also going to be hearing from Ethan Russo, detailing the endocannabinoid system, and we're also going to hear some patient stories, really get the feel on the ground of people who are using cannabis to get off of their addictions.
Really sort of putting a face to all that data, putting a human side to the policy debate. That's great. And Sue Sisley, of course, is going to be here this year, right, with talking veterans and talking athletes and such. Or is tell me some of the other stuff you have planned for Jersey City.
Sue will be there. She's going to be talking about a very cool database project she's working on to try to track and standardize some of the treatments that are really working for patients. Jersey City is an amazing place. It sort of gets ignored in the shadow of Manhattan sometimes, but it's been a hub of travel and transit and commerce since the beginning of our country and is still a hub of medical advancements. So we're going to be having our benefit dinner overlooking the Statue of Liberty on Friday night. And we'll also have some cool members-only things going on around the city.
Right on. So some terrific views of the New York City skyline and a lot of great people talking about medical cannabis and advancements. Now, New Jersey is also looking at legalization for adult use. So how patients will handle legalization, I presume, is going to be a major bit of discussion at this conference.
Especially at the Thursday policy workshop. That's absolutely right. Governor Murphy ran on legalization as a campaign platform, so it's really going to be the first time that it's going to be done by legislation and not initiative. So it's going to be interesting to see how that shapes up. Governor Murphy seems to be looking at it for the right reasons, social justice and, you know, supporting the people most affected by the drug war. And we just want to make sure the patients are remembered and all that.
Loyal listeners will recall that a week or so ago, we heard from some of the New Jersey Legislative Committee hearings that were going on in regard to adult use legalization and again, how patients would necessarily fare under such a thing. So this is terrific. Now, where can people go to find out more?
At patientsoutoftime.org, we have the full schedule up soon. The faculty list is up now, and registration is open.
Terrific. Laramie Silber, thank you so much.
Thank you, Doug.
And now, our top story, from mercenaries to marijuana. BioTrack THC is a company that provides seed-to-sale tracking, cannabis software, and dispensary point-of-sale systems for the marijuana industry. They're one of the biggest players in that seed-to-sale tracking market, with contracts to manage systems for several state governments, in addition to providing software and systems for the industry. Recently, a company called Helix TCS Inc. announced that it had completed its acquisition of BioTrack THC. Helix originally provided security, compliance, and technology services to the legal cannabis industry through its two subsidiaries, Security Consultants Group LLC and Boss Security Solutions. On October 9, 2015, it acquired a corporate shell called Jubilee for Gold and became Helix TCS Incorporated. Helix is owned by Zachary Venegas, a West Point grad and former infantry officer with a background in security as well as finance and corporate deal-making. Before starting up Helix, Venegas worked with Spruce Investment Advisors Strategic Advisory Group. He was also the co-founder and managing partner of Scimitar Global Ventures, a Dubai-based private equity and venture firm. Venegas founded and ran another company in Dubai. From 2006 through 2011, he ran Omega Strategic Services, a private security firm. According to the Helix website, Omega Strategic Services was, quote, a dynamic corporate/competitive intelligence and security advisory firm with operations in the Middle East and Africa that supported investors and corporations in creating successful operating environments and helping them to succeed by providing them with distinct, actionable intelligence and real-time data analytics, end quote. That's certainly one way to describe Omega Strategic Services. A less charitable way to put it is that OSS ran mercenaries. In 2009, various media reported that OSS was providing South African mercenaries to the military dictatorship in Guinea. According to a report by the South African news organization Independent Media and Independent Online, quote, the South Africans are training the president's guards, marines, and intelligence agents and providing security in some of the country's mines. The South Africans have also escorted considerable quantities of military equipment bought from Ukraine and smuggled into Conakry in defiance of an international arms embargo against Guinea, the sources say. They allege that OSS is being paid in gold and other mineral resources and that all the South Africans are armed and are acting as a special independent subunit of the presidency. End quote. A report in 2010 to the UN Human Rights Council by the Working Group on the Use of Mercenaries as a Means of Violating Human Rights and Impeding the Exercise of the Right of Peoples to Self-Determination noted that, quote, on 9 December 2009, the Working Group sent a communication to the government of South Africa concerning reports of presence of South African mercenaries in Guinea. According to the information received, a group of 2,000 to 3,000 Ghanaian from the Gerza and the related forester tribes is being trained by foreign mercenaries in a training camp in southern Guinea. Several sources stated that among those mercenaries were South African nationals that were recruited to provide protection and security and military training to the Ghanaian government led by Captain Musa Dadis Camara. The South African mercenaries appear to be former employees of the private military company Executive Outcomes and are allegedly operating under the leadership of Mr. Daniel Oosthuizen, a South African police veteran. They are reportedly employed by the Dubai-based company Omega Strategic Services. End quote. Now, according to the European sanctions website, quote, EU sanctions were first imposed on the Republic of Guinea in October 2009 in response to the violent crackdown on protests by the country's military regime in September of that year. These measures included an arms embargo, an embargo on the supply of equipment which could be used for internal repression, and also travel bans against the members of the government. End quote. Those restrictions weren't eased until after a presidential election in November of 2010 and remained in effect until 2014. You are listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. And now, let's turn our focus to human rights in the drug war. The Commission on Narcotic Drugs held its 61st annual session March 10th through 16th. In addition to plenaries and discussions by delegates, there were also side events organized by national delegations and by the NGOs. One of those side events was on human rights defenders under attack. We're going to listen to a portion of that side event. Maricela Orozco is from Mexico, and she's a member of the Familiares en Búsqueda María Herrera Collective, a group of family members of the disappeared organized in several states across Mexico. She'll be speaking in Spanish. The English language interpretation is provided by Daniel Holoy, Senior Policy Analyst, Amnesty International.
Today we will hear first from Maricela Orozco from Mexico. Marisela has been defending human rights since Mexico's bloody security strategy brought tragedy to her life. In 2014, two of his young kids were killed. One of them remained disappeared for more than 3 years. While searching for his son, in a context where more than 30,000 people remain disappeared in Mexico, she got together with other families who are also searching for the whereabouts of their loved ones. Together, they founded the organization Families of the Search Maria Herrera, and later they established the National Network of Families of People Forcibly Disappeared. Her work in the search for the disappeared and against the militarization of public security in Mexico has put her at grave risk, forcing her to leave the city where she lived with her family.
Buenos días, mi nombre es Marisela Orozco. Estoy aquí porque desgraciadamente sufrí el secuestro de mi hijo Gerson, estudiante de arquitectura de 19 años, y el asesinato de mi hijo Alan, de tan solo 15 años, estudiante de prepa y joven profesional del fútbol, y el asesinato de mi yerno Miguel.
Good morning. My name is Marisela Orozco. I come from Mexico. I am here today because, unfortunately, my kid, Gerson, of 19 years old, was kidnapped a little bit more than 3 years ago. And that same day, my son, Alan, who was an architecture student, and my son-in-law, Miguel, were also killed when they were looking for Gerson.
Mi hijo Gerson fue desaparecido en el marco de la violencia e impunidad que genera la guerra contra las drogas en México. Esta guerra ha consistido en la militarización de la seguridad pública, resultado de un aumento de violencia a los derechos humanos y alcanzando una cifra oficial de más de 30,000 personas desaparecidas desde el 2006.
My son Gerson was disappeared in the context of the violence and impunity that the war on drugs has brought to Mexico. This war has consisted in the militarization of public security, resulting in the increase of violence and human rights violations that has reached a number of more than 30,000 people disappeared since 2006.
En el caso de la desaparición de Gerson y el asesinato de Alan y Miguel, están involucrados agentes estatales y no estatales, e incluso de la Secretaría de la Defensa Nacional. Han participado en el encubrimiento de evidencia sensible del caso y actualmente la corrupción de los jueces para encubrir la delincuencia organizada.
In the case of the disappearance of Gerson and the killing of Alan and Miguel, are involved state and non-state actors, even the Secretary of Defense has participated in covering up for the evidence of this tragic case. And judges have currently also covering for organized crime.
A raíz de ahí empieza mi lucha por tratar de encontrar a mi hijo. En la búsqueda de Gerson, conocí a otros familiares y me uní a ellos para formar nuestra organización Familiares en Búsqueda María Herrera, y una red de colectivos de familiares de personas desaparecidas de todo el país llamada la Red de Enlaces Nacionales. Así, pasé de buscar solamente a mi hijo a buscar a todas las personas desaparecidas en México. De esta manera, me convertí en defensora de derechos humanos.
Because of this, I began my struggle to try to find my son. While looking for Gerson, I met other families, and we gathered together to found our organization, Families in the Search, Maria Herrera, and a network of other family collectives of people looking for their disappeared across all the country called the Network of National Groups. That's how I became from searching only for my son to look for many other people disappeared in Mexico. This is how I became a woman human rights defender.
Desde Familiares en Búsqueda María Herrera y la Red de Enlaces Nacionales, he participado en acciones de búsqueda en vida y búsqueda en fosas clandestinas. en el proceso de diseño de la ley de desaparición recientemente aprobada y en el proceso de resistencia a la ley de seguridad interior, que tristemente fue aprobada hace poco. También he participado activamente en esfuerzos organizativos para exigir un alto a la estrategia de guerra contra las drogas.
From these two organizations, I have joined actions to look for the disappeared alive and also in mass graves. I also participated in the process to draft the general law against disappearances, which was recently approved in Congress, and we also resisted a recent law on interior security, a law that was sadly approved just a few months ago. I have also joined active efforts to demand a stop of this war against drugs.
Además de los daños de la guerra contra las que la guerra contra las drogas ha significado para miles de familias que, como la mía, han perdido o están en búsqueda de sus seres queridos, defender los derechos humanos en este contexto es muy riesgoso. En nuestra labor de búsqueda han matado a varios compañeros, como Miriam Rodríguez, que buscaba a su hija Karen, y fue asesinada en mayo del año pasado en su casa, y el compañero José Jesús, quien buscaba a su hija Jenny, y fue asesinada en junio del 2016.
Besides the damages that this war against drugs has signified to thousands of families that, as my family, have lost their loved ones or are searching for their loved ones, defending human rights in this context, it's very, very dangerous. In our work for searching for the disappeared, many friends have been killed, like Miriam Elizabeth Rodriguez Martinez, who was looking for her daughter, Karen Alejandra, and was killed in May of last year at her house. Or our friend, Jose Jesus Jimenez Gaona, who was looking for her daughter, Jenny Isabel, and was killed in June 2016.
La búsqueda nos vuelve incómodos para actores criminales privados, pero también para el Estado, porque evidenciamos sus omisiones y su colusión con el crimen organizado. Al organizarnos y apropiarnos de los casos de todos y todas, como si fueran nuestros desaparecidos, aumenta nuestra vulnerabilidad.
The search for our loved ones makes us be uncomfortable both for criminal actors, but also for the state, because we evidence their omissions and their collusion with organized crime. By organizing ourselves and taking upon all the other cases, as if there are our own cases, our vulnerability increases.
Por otra parte, en México, la nula reparación del daño para nosotros los familiares de las víctimas es nula, como defensores de derechos humanos.
On the other hand, in Mexico, it's almost zero, the reparation of damages or effective remedies for victims of human rights violations and human rights defenders.
Yo pertenezco al mecanismo de protección para defensores de derechos humanos y periodistas, con una valoración de riesgo extraordinario, para lo cual el mecanismo me ha destinado algunas medidas de protección, como el botón de pánico, instalación de chapas de seguridad, barrotes, sensores de movimiento, reflectores. Sin embargo, la situación de riesgo que enfrenta mi familia es muy alto, por lo que la Procuraduría General de la República suple una parte importante de las funciones del mecanismo y nos otorga escoltas, como una medida adicional de seguridad, dado que las que propone el mecanismo son insuficientes.
I am part of the mechanism of protection for human rights defenders and journalists that has evaluated my risk as extraordinary. The mechanism has granted me some protection measures, such as a panic alert, the installation of strong doors and windows, a GPS sensor, and lights across my house. However, the risk situation me and my family are facing is very, very high. And that's why the Attorney General Office has been forced to intervene as well and to give me some police to protect me and my family, because the measures proposed by the mechanism are insufficient.
El botón de pánico es una medida privatizada que cuando lo activas te pone en contacto con una empresa. Además, es insuficiente porque no tiene la capacidad de reacción adecuada ante una emergencia y con frecuencia el aparato no funciona. En casos de emergencia te mandan rondines de patrulla, lo cual no te protege en caso de un intento de homicidio o ataque directo.
The panic alert is a privatized measure that when you activate it, it puts you in touch with a private corporation. Besides, it is inefficient because it doesn't have the capacity to react adequately before an emergency. And frequently, the button doesn't work. In emergency cases, the police would only send some people to police around your house, but they won't be able to protect you when they are trying to kill you or to attack you directly.
Sumado a esto, llegar a formar parte del mecanismo es muy complicado y necesitas el acompañamiento de una organización de la sociedad civil especializada en lidiar con el mecanismo para que tu caso sea incorporado y mantenido dentro del mecanismo, y para exigir constantemente la adecuación de las medidas de protección.
In addition, being able to be considered by the mechanism is very complex, and you necessarily need the follow-up of a civil society organization that is specialized in dealing with the mechanism, just in order for the authorities to take your case into consideration and be kept within the mechanism, and to have to demand constantly that the specific measures granted are evaluated and changed according to the necessities.
El mecanismo siempre va a ser insuficiente mientras los casos de personas defensoras agredidas sigan aumentando. El mecanismo no implementa medidas preventivas ni medidas integrales para reducir los índices de impunidad en estos ataques. Sin embargo, se mantendrá un ciclo activo de agresión a defensores de derechos humanos y periodistas.
The mechanism will always be insufficient while the cases of human rights defenders attack are increasing. The mechanism does not implement measures to prevent these attacks, nor comprehensive measures to reduce the rates of impunity for these attacks. Without this, the cycle of attacks and threats against human rights defenders and journalists will definitely continue.
El ciclo de impunidad y corrupción que alimenta la guerra contra las drogas no ha permitido que encontremos a todas y todos nuestros desaparecidos y pone en riesgo a quienes defendemos los derechos humanos. Por esto, es urgente cambiar la estrategia de políticas de drogas a una que garantice la protección de los derechos humanos.
The cycle of impunity and corruption that fuels the war against drugs has not allowed us to fight for our disappearing and increases the risks for those of us who defend human rights. This is why it is urgent to need the strategy and drug control policies in Mexico towards one that guarantees the full protection of human rights.
Muchas gracias por todo y comentarles que apenas en diciembre, este diciembre que pasó, pude encontrar a mi hijo, el que estaba secuestrado. Gracias.
Thank you very much. And I just want to share that this last December, we found the body of our son who was kidnapped for more than 3 years.
That was Maricela Orozco. She is a member of a group of family members of the disappeared that are organized in several states across Mexico. The English language interpretation was provided by Daniel Holoy from Amnesty International. They were speaking at a side event at the Commission on Narcotic Drugs' 61st annual session. The event was on human rights defenders under attack. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm Doug McVeigh. And finally, on March 15th, Veterans Affairs Secretary Dr. David Shulkin testified before a House Appropriations Subcommittee on the President's 2019 budget request for the Veterans Affairs Department. He had this exchange with Representative Barbara Lee, the California Democrat who represents the 13th District, Oakland, Berkeley, and San Leandro, California.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Secretary, for being here. Once again, as the daughter of a World War II and Korean veteran, I'm really pleased to know that we have a secretary dedicated to ensuring the veterans receive the quality health care. I know the VA intimately as a result of my dad, so thank you very much. A couple of things I want to mention to you. First of all, I have a letter that I'm going to give to you regarding Alameda Point. This is the new outpatient clinic in my district. Mm. Now it appears it'll be 2 years now off track in terms of timing. So I'd like, and I'm asking you in this letter to give me monthly updates on the status of this, because I'm quite concerned about what's taking place. So that's for the record, and I'll give that to you.
Thank you.
And then secondly, now coming from California, of course, you know we have a variety of dispensaries which make marijuana available to patients and veterans who use it for PTSD or chronic pain, and it works. Okay, now, you've said that the VA can't recommend medical cannabis in accordance with state laws until the federal law changes. But marijuana Schedule I status does block formal prescriptions, but it does not block the ability of doctors to fill out questionnaire forms in those states. So what's the problem? What's the federal statute that blocks the VA from doing this and not letting physicians simply recommend cannabis to veterans who need it, and it's proven that it works?
Congresswoman, so would filling out a questionnaire, isn't that the step towards prescribing?
Somebody has
to write the prescription.
It's not a formal prescription, no. It's just a recommendation form. That's all the state requires, not a prescription.
So who writes the prescription for the medical marijuana?
The physician would recommend cannabis.
My understanding is VA federal law would not allow the physician to write the prescription, but so I have to understand what the questionnaire would be in order to make a recommendation but not write a prescription.
Well, could we show you that questionnaire,
Absolutely.
Mr. Secretary?
Absolutely.
Because veterans need this. It works, and it's a shame and disgrace that the VA is preventing this type of treatment that works. So, and we know the federal statutes and whatnot, but this is merely a questionnaire, so I'd like for you to review that.
I'd be glad to review that, yes.
That was Veterans Affairs Secretary Dr. David Shulkin failing to understand the point that Representative Barbara Lee was making about the very basic distinction between making a recommendation, which is legally protected, and writing a prescription, which is not. He was speaking before the House Appropriations Subcommittee on the Veterans Affairs Budget for 2019. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. The executive producer of the Drug Truth Network is Dean Becker. Drug Truth Network programs are available by podcast. Go to the website at drugtruth.net to find the URLs to subscribe. The Drug Truth Network is on Facebook. Please give its page a like. Drug War Facts is on Facebook, too. Give its page a like and share it with friends. Remember, knowledge is power. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh, and of course also at Drug Policy Facts. We'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of news and information about the drug war and this century of lies. For now, for the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.